Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench, everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.
Hackers are after your business data. I can help. I am Vi, the virtual intelligence assistant at Virtual Armor.
Virtual Armor, partnered with Juniper Networks, provides cybersecurity services and end-to-end solutions to keep what's yours, yours. Defend yourself with managed firewall and managed SIM essential core services that are economical and efficient. Virtual Armor goes beyond just initial alerting to provide a thorough report on threats, vulnerabilities, and results.
Let me help protect you. Contact me at justaskvi. That's vi.com.
Good morning, Carolinas. Welcome to your Labor Day weekend here on Carolina Focus. We are on News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, 107.9 The Link, and 102.5 610 WFNZ. We are Intercom Radio Charlotte. Carolina Focus is also available on WBT.com. We're your co-hosts, Sharon Thorsland and Ed Billick. And this morning, we're going to focus on football, college football, the NFL football, and not so much the game itself, but the business behind the business. We'll start off with the rebranding of the Charlotte 49ers. We'll end up in the second half listening to David Tepper, and Sharon and I will provide our comments and thoughts as September is here and football season is getting ready to kick off.
Thanks so much for joining us today, everyone, here on Carolina Focus. We have a very special guest this morning. It's Chris Fuller. He is the Deputy Athletic Director for External Affairs for the Charlotte 49ers. Chris, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, it's really good to be with you, Sharon. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, I know that a lot of people have probably already heard of this. The 49ers have a new brand, new logos, a whole new look. Can you tell us a little bit just the history behind this? First of all, what prompted the search and the whole implementation of new branding and new logos?
Yeah, you know, we had decided, Mike and our leadership team, about maybe almost a year and a half ago now, Sharon, that we wanted to assess our brand. And we didn't go into it saying we're determined to change it. We just wanted to really understand how our fan base felt about our current branding and see what we could learn about how we moved into the future. So we partnered with Luke Wire George Andrews. And it was about a year and a half ago. We did some extensive research with a lot of our stakeholder groups. We learned a lot. And what we learned during that process encouraged us to say, hey, this seems like a really good time for us, with a lot of the new leadership and a lot of the momentum, to go ahead and explore new branding concepts. So we transitioned from research into that creative phase again, saying, hey, what do we have to lose? We may, if we find something that we really like that we think matches up with what we learned during the research, then this could be a great opportunity for us.
What were some of those things in the research that you were looking for? What kinds of questions were you asking? What were you trying to find out?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're really trying to find out how much affinity people have with your existing brand. How much recognition is there? Do people recognize it outside of your immediate area? Is it unique, distinct? Do they love it? And then there's some practical considerations too. Our previous mark was four colors, and I could almost, if I showed you seven different applications of the Charlotte 49er mark with the C pick and the 49ers in it, there would be six different variations of it.
Okay.
And invariably one of them would be the actual one.
Okay.
But like if you saw something like just green and white, it didn't have any of the detail of the mark. So it was also, the mark itself was really difficult to reproduce. So we learned some things, but I think people liked our branding. It wasn't this sort of visceral, we have to change. But we felt like we had momentum to look at something new. We just felt like the time was good. It had been about almost 20 years. So.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask you. How long was the old one in place? So about 20 years. So now when you started coming up with the process of like, all right, we're going to start really looking into this, where were those first ideas coming from? How did you come up with the new stuff?
Yeah, you know, we went into it, you know, you obviously have some thoughts and you have some ideas. We tried to be really disciplined by not sharing a lot of our personal, hey, I think this would work or that would work. I really wanted Todd Aldridge, who's LGA's lead creative person, I really wanted him to take the research, take the brand promise we created, this fearlessly embracing momentum, this energy thought, and go see what you come up with. I think I will say that one of the things that was interesting in the process, Sharon, is, you know, we started this process in early April of 2019. And of course, we had the shooting on our campus on April 30th. And I'll never forget the image that evening of Chief Baker after they had contained the situation. Chief Baker's doing interviews wearing a Nike shirt with the Athletics logo. And in this moment, this, you know, tragic moment, the way the community rallied around the university and around us and our students was really powerful. And it influenced our thought process. Like if you went into this with a blank sheet of paper and said, everything's on the table, we could even change our colors. You know, a lot of us walked away from that going, we really need to be careful. You know, so much of our identity is tied up in that color green. And so there were some really interesting, benchmarks during the process that you couldn't have, and of course then, you know, COVID, no one plans for
nobody plans for that with a brand.
No, we seem to hit for the cycle in terms of how many strange things happened during that period. But
so I know that people can't see this because it is radio, but I can see the shirt that you're wearing right now is the green with that new main logo of the C with the pickaxe in it. Can you sort of describe the main logo and then the secondary ones that you all decided on?
Yeah, we came up with a family, and the family is built around this all in C, and more often than not, the primary will be the all in C in green, but obviously we can reverse it in white. It's a one color mark. It's distinct in that way. We also created one of the things that we found in our research, not surprisingly, and we were glad we did because it's something we felt really strongly about, is we wanted to strengthen our connection to the city of Charlotte. We think it's one of the, if not the greatest selling point we have for come be part of what's happening in Charlotte and at UNC Charlotte. So that secondary mark became the CLT, which we thought bridged that connection. So that's the secondary. And then we created two tertiary marks, the 49er mark and the Niner mark, which I think, you know, the thought process on those pieces of identification was that you'd probably use those more for retail, more for workout gear, that you'd see the all in C and the CLT more in association with uniforms, facilities, things like that. So, and then we also, we didn't build it from scratch, but we also identified particular fonts that we thought worked well. You know, as soon as you come up with this version of a C, we didn't think we were going to try to create a font that was all letters like this.
Okay.
You know, it's a distinct look. So we dug in and looked at fonts and numeral sets and all those things as a natural progression as well.
So with this all in C, what are you hoping to convey? What does that symbolize to your fans and just people around?
Yeah, you know, I think when we went through the research with LGA, and they were just a tremendous partner, the brand promise, and we're not going to necessarily promote this externally, it's more about how we want to challenge ourselves within our department. The brand promise became fearlessly embracing momentum, right? We felt like we had this real energy in our program. We had just come off of our first ever bowl game. Our men's basketball team had doubled its win total from the prior year. Our women's basketball team was on its way to the postseason. We just felt like we had some momentum. So this C became not in, you know, this all-in idea, I think, is pretty common to athletics, but the actual presence of the pickaxe within the C, and then if you'll notice, the C's got exactly a 9-degree forward lean. So we wanted to use that to sort of convey this idea of momentum.
Okay, I can see that now there. We're speaking with Chris Fuller. He is the Deputy Athletic Director for External Affairs for the Charlotte 49ers, and he was really the lead guy who spearheaded this whole rebranding of the Charlotte 49ers new logo and branding that we are discussing here today. So in the process of coming up with all of these logos, when they were presenting them to you and you guys decided, okay, these look pretty good, did you then reach out to any of your athletes or coaches or alumni or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, this is, I've done this before at other institutions, but this was the most thorough process I've been part of in terms of, for example, long before we rolled out, we had presented this concept to our student athlete advisory committee. Okay. We had presented it to the chancellor's cabinet. We had presented it to our athletic foundation executive committee. So we had tried to vet it through a large number of folks that really love and care about the Charlotte 49ers. And it was interesting, Mike and I remember, you know, one of the last sort of approval meetings like that or pitch meetings was with the student athlete advisory committee. And, you know, Mike was a little anxious before we went in, and he and I are just talking out. So he goes, what are we going to do if they don't like it? Mike, I said, you know the answer. We've said we're going to be a very student athlete centered program. So if they don't buy into it, well, you have your answer. I think we're back to the drawing board. And not surprisingly, Sharon, we saw a lot of other concepts that LGA presented before we arrived at this one. But, you know, the buy-in that we got from a lot of those related groups was really important to the process. And, you know, I've worked at bigger institutions. I could have never done that. I could have never done those kind of sessions at Tennessee or the ACC or because it would have been out like that.
Oh my God.
You know, we could have never kept it under wraps. And then the other thing that we were really, really proactive with is in January, we communicated with all of the university's licensees. So anybody that manufactures any kind of product with us. And in January, we gave them a right to sign a non-disclosure agreement. And for those that did, we gave them the art 6 months in advance of the launch.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, we wanted to encourage them to start making designs, to start thinking about retail. And it's one of my points of emphasis is I want us to be more proactive and trying to get folks to carry our merchandise. So we were out with all of our licensees 6 months in advance. So needless to say, when all of those people start having the artwork that far in advance, you start getting pretty nervous about.
Yeah.
I didn't sleep a lot during that window.
That's pretty impressive. They kept it under wraps. That's pretty good. So yeah. You got everything in place. You got the approval. You got the sign off, and then bam, coronavirus hits. What a great time to launch a new brand. How has this worked for you guys?
You know, it's classic. You talk about, I told Philip Tate, one of my colleagues at Luke Wire, George Andrews, that, and he and I had worked together a long, long time ago when I worked with the ACC, and so we had a long relationship. I told him afterwards that one of the things I've gotten better at as I've developed is I can move on to the next play. Like when we make a mistake, which you're invariably going to do, I've gotten a lot better at not dwelling on the mistake, because it's, you know, you just, I'll go deal with the next play. And we had so many, I mean, we were initially going to roll this out right after graduation in May. And of course, then COVID hits. We've got a transition with our chancellor position going on. So we pumped the brakes. Obviously, we didn't think this was that important at that time. Then we were going to launch in August when we came back to campus. Well, then that starts getting a little sketchy.
Yeah, a little
iffy. And so we had some really interesting benchmarks that made June 23rd make sense. One is that we were refinishing our basketball court. So I knew by the beginning of July, the basketball court in a heavily trafficked building was going to carry the new brand. So we had a couple things like that that made that window in late June. And the other thing, honestly, Sharon, when we postponed it in May, I didn't think we would launch the brand while our campus was on an altered status. But honestly, by the time we had gone from March to June, it didn't even feel like an altered status anymore.
Right, I know. And we're sort of like,
and now I don't even know what month it is now.
Yeah. Well, certainly not an ideal time to launch, but I mean, you guys did that great video presentation, and it was live, and a lot of people were able to participate in it. What's the feedback been so far?
You know, the feedback, it's interesting because these things are hard. They're really hard. And, you know, we did sort of that soft launch on Saturday, Sharon, and when we just put out this sort of epic video about our history, and the video got great reviews. People weren't sure about the logo because all you saw was the football helmet spin at the end of that video. So the very initial reaction, we were taking some hits that weekend, and I kept saying to our team, I said, look, we know we have more story to tell, and we know we're going to tell it in full on Tuesday. So let's not overreact. And I think when we told the story in full on Tuesday, it's really pivoted. The feedback, and you're never going to get 100% or even 90.
Sure.
But it's been really positive since that June 23rd launch. And I give our coaches a tremendous amount of credit for that too. They were all quick to buy in, and their voice is much more influential than mine. They've been tremendous.
So I know that you've got the basketball floor now is done. Where else is it everywhere already on campus, or is it sort of a slower rollout for some areas?
Yeah, that's another thing we adjusted based on COVID. We had planned to replace the football field as well. And we had some other significant facility things that we would have gotten done in time for launch. But when we sat down as a leadership team and looked at each other in the eye, facing all the financial challenges the university's facing and the athletic department's facing, we just didn't feel like those were responsible choices. So we prioritized all of our uniforms. So, you know, I didn't want to piecemeal that. I wanted all of our teams to be able to participate in it. So all of our uniforms will be the new designs and the new brands. A new weight facility that we have inherited in the student, in the SAC and the Barnhart building will has all the new branding as well. But then we sort of step back and we're kind of taking things case by case based on, you know, what's more important. Obviously, as soon as COVID hit, all of us felt like the most important thing is taking care of our student athletes. And, you know, we had student athletes and we had students on our campus with food insecurities, with housing issues, and we sort of immediately pivoted towards most of our resources we need to put in that direction. So it's still sort of a phased approach.
Sure, certainly makes sense in the arena that we're in right now. So as of right now, football still go. I know that that's been changing, you know, it seems like daily around the United States because who knows what's going on. But so when the football team takes the field, what they're going to have the C, the all-in C on their helmet, what's going to be on the rest of the jersey?
They will. It'll be, there's three versions of the uniform for football. There's a white on white, then there's a green jersey, green helmet version. And then we've still got, I know people love our chrome gold helmet. The chrome gold helmet will be coming back as well. But the all in C will be a part of all those helmet designs. And you'll see the CLT in the front of the yoke and the football helmet, which will be really nice, and some other nice accents. I think people will be really pleased with the uniforms. Now, you know, that's been a challenge as well, Sharon. Everybody's supply chains, not just merchandise or retail, but uniforms. I believe if we were to play a football game as we were originally scheduled, we'd be chasing our uniform.
I didn't even think about that.
And it's not just us. It's you know, it's there are challenges all over the apparel landscape right now.
Wow. Yeah. You don't, didn't even think about that coming into play with things. So I guess in a way it's a blessing in disguise that things have been delayed, at least in terms of this new branding rollout. Now, I know that I've read some of the comments from some of your athletes in particular, and they seem to really love that CLT for some reason. Why do you think that's resonating so much with guys?
You know, it's interesting. When we talked about rolling out the brand around the table, we said, hey, this is going to be unique. I think this may be one of those times where the secondary brand is actually used to launch the primary, because it's going to take people a while to affiliate the LNC with the Charlotte 49ers. Sure. But I think when people see CLT, they know right away that you're talking about Charlotte. And I think that's resonated with our athletes and our coaches. I think our coaches love that aspect of it from a recruiting standpoint. They feel like they don't have to explain. People see CLT and they know who they are. And so I think that has really gotten some traction amongst our athletes and our coaches.
Yeah, I saw that comment from Coach Healy, though, the football coach, of course, and he said, now when we go into, you know, a football stadium, when we go into a school, they're going to see that CLT and know exactly who we are and recognize that, and that's just going to help build recruiting and just their whole just presence in North Carolina and around the United States as well.
Well, the other aspect of it, I give 704 Shop a great deal of credit for that as well. I mean, them coming on board as a licensee for the university is one of the really big success stories for us with the launch, and them helping us introduce the brand. They have such credibility with their gear and their merchandise and then our other Charlotte partners that I thought them helping us with the rollout and creating some CLT merchandise early really helped us. And I'm really grateful for it.
So now where can people buy all of this merchandise right now?
Yeah, it's the best outlet is still our bookstore on campus or our Barnes & Noble website that you can get to off of charlotte49ers.com. Okay. 704 Shop, I know, is in the process of, they've got some really cool new designs for the fall that are coming out, so I would keep your eye on them as well. We're tracking a number of other licensees. I think we had about 60 licensees opt in. So you'll wow. start seeing it at some of the bigger box stores, the Walmarts, the Dick's, places like that. Now, I think one of the things we've seen is a lot of those places have either put a hold on orders or have not orders as aggressively because they're dealing with issues related to COVID as well. So that was one of the other hurdles we faced a little bit, Sharon. I felt like June 23rd from a merchandise availability standpoint wasn't going to be significantly different than August. And as we're sitting here in August, I'd say that's true. So
that's the case.
We're still chasing that a little bit, but Barnes and Noble on campus has been really good, and 704 Shop is doing their thing as well.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like this has been quite a success, and you've got some more things to build on with getting that logo out all over campus. And once people are back in the swing of things, I'm sure it's going to take off even more from there. So thank you so much for talking with us today and letting us know all about this new Charlotte 49ers brand.
Absolutely, Sharon. Thanks for having me. And please let us know if we can ever assist in anything down the road.
Absolutely. We've been speaking with Chris Fuller. He's the Deputy Athletic Director for External Affairs for the Charlotte 49ers, telling us all about their new brand and logos. Thank you so much, Chris.
Sharon, that was quite an interview with the Charlotte 49ers, the whole rebranding thing. I guess college football is right around the corner, isn't it?
Absolutely. This week, we're going to get things kicked off here with the Charlotte 49ers. They're going to start on Saturday, taking on App State. That's going to be a huge game now because it's going to be televised nationally on ESPN2. They're going to kick things off at noon on Saturday. So we have a full slate of football. So now, there will be no fans, as everything else these days, it seems like. No fans, but still, it's a big game for the 49ers. So, and for App State fans, it's going to be a lot of fun.
You know, it's great. I remember when I first moved here, the football organization did not exist. So that program has really emerged over the few years that they've been playing.
Absolutely. And Will Healy has done a tremendous job in his first season and, you know, really got the energy levels up and they're really moving in the right direction. And that's why they felt like combining it with this rebranding right now. It was just good timing for everything. And the sales have been doing great with all of their new merchandise. And I think Will Healy has played a big part of that in the success of the football team. And basketball is also improving. But football, they've made tremendous strides in a short period of time. And I think Will Healy is taking them in the right direction, no doubt.
Yeah, he has a great future ahead of him, if not here, even elsewhere. He's got bigger things on the horizon. Hey, quickly, if folks just joined us here on Carolina Focus, the rebranding, give me like two or three highlights that came out of Chris's interview.
Well, they've completely rebranded their logo. You're used to seeing the minor, you know, with the axe picks. Now they've got the big C. They call it the all-in C that has the axe, sort of the pickaxe embedded within that. And they're redoing it on everything, on the football stadium, on the basketball court, everywhere you see. So they also have the CLT logo that you see for the, you know, Charlotte Airport, of course, that everybody connects with Charlotte. So that's another big piece of this rebranding is the CLT. And that's really resonated with a lot of the younger people. A lot of the athletes really like that CLT. So, but they're doing it full force all across the board. It's going to be rolling out over all of the buildings and things. Eventually, you're going to see it across the campus. But it's still coming out in bits and pieces right now because of the coronavirus pandemic. But it's a really neat new logo, and I think people are really going to like it.
So I should get online and from their store and order a new T-shirt then, huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. They're getting them loaded up, and I think it's the 704 store here in Charlotte, they said, is carrying a lot of their merchandise as well. So you can get it at the student store, you can get it online, you can get it a lot of different places now.
That's
beautiful. Yeah, it's pretty neat. It's a pretty neat new logo.
Hey, as we're coming back, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back the second half here, and David Tepper spoke to us this week, didn't he?
Absolutely. For the first time since January, Mr. Tepper spoke to the media, had a roundtable on Wednesday afternoon that I was able to be a part of. And he touched on all sorts of topics, from, you know, having no fans in the stands to how Matt Rhule is doing to why they released Cam Newton. So he's got some really interesting things to say.
I can't wait to listen to that. We'll do that coming back after the break. And then after Mr. Tepper, Sharon and I will rejoin you to share our thoughts here on this Labor Day weekend. 30 seconds before break, Sharon, any plans this weekend?
We are going up to the lake for the rest of today and tomorrow. We're going to have a little boating weekend and enjoy the nice weather up on Moss Lake at Shelby.
Beautiful.
Lake nobody's ever heard of.
And it's supposed to get a little cooler from what I felt this morning as we got up. So, hey.
Yeah. Got a little taste of fall in the air. Who knows? Maybe things are going to start settling down. We'll get some nice September weather.
And finally, folks, if you have a topic you want us to pursue, to investigate for you here in the Carolinas, email us. You can email me, ed.billick@entercom.com, and we'd love to follow up on some of your suggestions. We're Carolina Focus. That's Sharon. I'm Ed. We'll be right back after the break. Well, welcome back to Carolina Focus. You're listening to us, Carolina Focus, on News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, 107.9 The Link, and 102.65, 610 WFNZ. We are Intercom Radio Charlotte, and happy Labor Day weekend to all of you. By the way, this show can be heard as a podcast on WBT.com. We are your co-hosts, Sharon Thorsland. I'm Ed Billick. Let's get started for the second half, an interview with the Carolina Panthers owner, David Tepper.
I would like to ask you sort of two things. One about the social justice initiatives, and two about removing Jerry Richardson's statue and the reasons for that.
Well, Jerry Richardson's statue, as we said, was a safety reason at the time. If you remember the environment, every statue in the country was coming under attack. So it just made sense from all standpoints to move that statue. And we made a fast decision. It was a right decision. And that's, that was why it was done. As far as social justice initiatives, in what respect are you asking that?
Just in terms of you've been active on this, your players have been active on this, but what your priorities are right now?
Well, I think from a club standpoint, we have a voting initiative that we're trying to do. But I think I've met with the players. Some of my priorities also having an understanding and a continued communication with them about what we're going to do. It's not just me, it's them and how the Panthers organization does things totally. This is just a continued dialogue. Here, I'll give you something, Scott. This will make Truman cry. But From my perspective, one thing we tried to do at the Panthers and we'll try to do harder is just, diversity of our workforce. I think we've done a fairly good job at the upper management level. We've done an okay job at, through the corporation. I think in football and NFL teams in general, I think every NFL team has to look at their team. And on the business side, you guys always concentrate on the football side, but business is big. Football's a small microcosm. Business is big. And I think we got to lead in business in this regard. So I hope, you guys should, ask me. And quite frankly, I talked to Goodell about this. Ask the NFL about it, too. I think this is one thing we really should be leading as owners and the NFL. But as far as the Panthers themselves, this is a collaborative thing that, my view is that, we'll do with them. And, I do my own thing also. We've been involved with the Bill Project and other things in the past. It's nothing. This is not a, Johnny come lately thing for me. So I don't know if that answers.
That's good. Thank you.
Let's go Elena, then Katie.
Hi, Dave. Hope you're doing well. It's been a while. Elena Getzenberg from the Charlotte Observer. I was wondering, with the delay in the Rock Hill development, if you could just give any update that you have on Rock Hill, and with the change there, what is your position on potentially having training camp at Wofford in 2022?
Well, Rock Hill, I mean, if you go down there, there's definitely work being done there. You know, COVID has delayed everything. I think, we'll probably, three seasons out, we'll have training camp, down there. Listen, as far as, Wofford, I really can't say. It's really a COVID question. It's a COVID question. It's also a question of what we've done here and how much, we really have done a lot of things inside the stadium. You guys are aware of some of them. Every player had a suite up here. I think there was a recognition of what we could do up here and how it was done up here. But, we haven't made any decision. Certainly COVID plays a lot in that, and if we're allowed to even, so.
Let's go to Steve Harrison.
Hey, David. Thank you. Steve Harrison with WFAE. Has the organization had any more conversations with Cooper's administration about getting people in the stands? I know, yesterday they increased the limit, 50 people outdoors. But if do you guys have any hope that there'll be some special exceptions made for the team, like exceptions were made for the Republican National Convention to have more people than the rules allow?
We have had some conversation with government today, or maybe not direct, but indirect conversations. So we hope to have continued conversations. Listen, I understand Cooper has a difficult job with his COVID, from an optics standpoint and a science standpoint. We started developing a plan in March based on science. We spent a lot of time in it. As we put out, we got infectious disease experts in the plan, computer simulations, the whole bit, try to be as safe as we can be. We do think we can do this. We don't think we can do it as full stadium, obviously, but we think with limited fans, we can do limited fans very safely in the stadium, based on pure science. And I hope, we also noticed that our competitors in the South division, all those states have given approval. Now they're not playing games, their first game either. So that's good. But I do think they're going to be playing their third game and fourth game and fifth game, et cetera, in front of fans. I think New Orleans, Louisiana, Georgia, and Florida, they all have approval. And I expect that those teams will be having fans through the year. We're hopeful that when we get into October, we'll be talking with the governor and we'll have fans too. The only teams that seem not to have given away the whole season, at least places, are California and New York. Maybe Washington, D.C. Kind of hope North Carolina is not like California and New York, but maybe we are. I don't know. In some respects, I don't think we are. But, I'm hopeful we'll have continued conversations. Science will prevail, and we'll have fans. I'm also a little disappointed at the number of, 25, 50 for our players and coaches and such, for our first-year players and playing the first game, and some of the coaches. I mean, we can't have these, their moms and their wives at the stadium. That's just kind of sad. But I guess this is, there's a lot of sad things in COVID. But again, listen, I hope we can have continued conversation and dialogue with them.
Will Kunkel.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for doing this, man. Will Kunkel, Fox 46 Sports. Just to kind of piggyback off of that, have you talked to Roger Goodell about competitive balance with fans, and where do you stand on that, whether it's fair or unfair, that you'll be playing in front of other people's fans but not yours?
Listen, I think, it's just what it is. And we'll do our best. I think, you know, the coach will do his best to compensate for that. Listen, it is not an advantage not to have fans, okay? And I particularly like fans at games. I mean, I do. Anybody who's seen me at the games knows that. I think the league has determined that the teams that can't have fans will have fans, and the teams that can't have fans can't have fans. And it's just a question of how, you know, the different regions are, I guess, and what they view and how the different governors are and such, and maybe how much they like football or not. I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry, Steve. Travis.
Mike Salarte.
Thanks, John. Hey, Mr. Tepper. Good to see you again. Kind of piggybacking off of the fans in the building aspect of it. Obviously, even at reduced capacity, your franchise takes a financial hit in not having full capacity. But the question is that I have is, what safeguards or what help is in place from the league to help franchises get through without having minimal capacity, no capacity? I mean, the league's going to be taking a hit all across the board even by having partial fans in the building.
No doubt. And listen, I mean, there's, you know, the TV, listen, there's red ink's going to flow. Okay. There's no doubt about it. At least they'll flow down here without, you know, even if we have partial fans, we're going to, you know, it's hard not to have red ink, you know, what we're, you know, thinking if you get the, you know, the Miami 13,000, for instance, just to match at one stadium. The league is not doing anything specific. They have made more lines of credit available for those who need it. That's about it. In the negotiations, I mean, when we had the negotiations, I think there was reported that there was a bottom of the salary cap. That's not good for us. That's good for the players, you know. But the support has been basically more credit lines available, I think.
Hey, Dave, two questions. A follow-up, first of all, to the Richardson statue question. You had mentioned that being the right decision at the time and the climate that was pervasive back in June. Would you have any intention of bringing the statue back once things were to calm down? And then secondly, if you could address your decision to make the furloughs and the layoffs you did a week or two ago, please.
As far as the statue is concerned, I don't think things will ever be quieted down. Okay. That's that. I don't believe in it, nor should they. Okay. In some respects. As far as different furloughs and such, listen, when we came in here, we didn't make a lot of changes. There were two different levels. Some of those things were changes that needed to be done for a while, and some of those are just responding to the current environment of limited fans. And listen, it's very difficult times, and you know, we'll have to see what comes. I doubt that we'll have full fans this season. Listen, it's difficult decisions, and it's decisions that keep me up and still keep me up. Okay, but the question is, what's right for the organization and what's right for the individual in the long term? That's what you have to think about when you're running an organization. And I don't take one person lightly. Okay, do not think I do. Okay, I don't.
Jonathan Jones.
Hey, Dave. On that topic to follow up, what sort of financial losses have you all suffered through these 6 months? I guess maybe a percent loss through this point in the season, understanding greater losses are sure to come as games are played without fans. And then just not to belabor the point, but you and the layoffs and the furloughs during this quarantine have far outstripped your NFL owner peers. And I'm curious, you're not the only one among the owners who has suffered losses here. How do you sort of justify almost doubling the next closest NFL owner in terms of layoffs and furloughs?
You're making a mistake when you talk that way, okay? and you didn't listen to my previous answer. I decide on these decisions based on what's good for the organization, what's good for the individual. It's not good to have an individual sit there idle for a year or a year and a half or 2 years with nothing to do inside an organization. Okay, they may think it, you know, that's not good for a person. So, and it's not an easy decision, okay, but it's the right decision, I think. So you're basing this purely on a financial question. This is a human question, and every individual's an individual. So, and, you know, so I don't know how to answer except for that, okay? It is not, I do believe that, okay? What's good, you know, it's not like these things were made lightly. Do you think this is like a pure dollar and cents to answer? Okay, was not. And sometimes, you know, difficult decisions, it doesn't mean, you know, hard, difficult decisions, sometimes they're still the right decision. It may not seem the right decision for everybody involved at the time, but they're still the right decision.
Hi, Dave. Brett Jensen with WBT. I'm curious to go off of what Katie had asked you earlier about the stadium in Charlotte, Pipe and Foundry. If that land were to become yours, are you looking to build a new stadium or renovate the stadium? Because I've heard things from both sides that you just want to renovate, maybe put a roof on what's currently there and renovate this existing stadium. And other people believe that you actually want to build a new stadium. And the other thing is, in terms of, I guess it was late last year, you talked about hiring VP of football operations to assist Marty Herney. How is that? Has that happened, or how is that coming along?
Look, with the stadium, with this COVID, you know, it's pushed everything, you know, back, or all decisions back. You know, open air stadiums and beautiful with beautiful weather seem a lot better to me today than they did last year, to tell you the truth. And your second question, you know, when Matt Rowe came in, we brought in Sean Patton, and he's done a lot, you know, as far as inside operations. So freeing Marty Herney to do more for evaluating players. So there's, you know, Marty Herney has two different roles. One is, you focus on the evaluating players, and the other is running, you know, a lot of different operations inside the building. So Sean's come in and done a lot of that, and it's kind of relieved the need to do that second thing at this point in time.
Ashley Mahoney.
Hey, it's Chris Jenkins with Charlotte Vibe. Just two-part question, if I can. Am I live? I think my screen messed up. Am I here?
I hear you. I don't see you, but...
All right. With fans not being in the stadium this year, or so far starting out, do you have a message for them? And the second question is, can you discuss your impressions and thoughts of Coach Rhule and what he's done with this team up until this point?
Listen, I miss the fans. That's what it's about. It's about winning in the fans. I mean, I really like the fans. Like I said, I like the fans in the building. I like going out amongst the fans sometimes, as people probably have seen me out there sometimes. And they are an undeniable edge for us. We said it. They are. It's hard not to have fans in the building, especially going to be hard not to have fans in the building if all our, you know, all our division rivals have fans in their buildings. We hope that we will have it and not have that competitive disadvantage. As far as Coach Rhule, I couldn't be more pleased with Coach Rhule. I come from, you know, a place where you have process. You know, this is my, you know, my world, discipline process world. And, you know, Coach Rhule's discipline process, he also has that old hard-nosed sort of Pittsburgh deal. He's not from Pittsburgh, but he's from Pennsylvania, not too far away. So, you know, I think I appreciate all that about him. And I think he has a great way about him, a great communicator. He's a good speaker with you all, but he's also a great communicator with his players. And I really appreciate that.
So our team will close with Quan.
Thanks, Stephen. I guess a question that hasn't been asked in this session is how are you holding up? Because you seem like you're fighting through a lot of emotions and frustrations right now. And that is not typical Dave Tepper, at least that we've seen since your arrival.
In what respect?
Well, the smile that you're fighting right now hasn't been around as often as it has been in the past.
Well, listen, this is COVID, right? Who's smiling as much during COVID as they did without COVID? It's a very difficult situation. I'm doing fine. I'm, been up north a little bit more. You know, when I was coming down there, I had to get tested 4 times to come in the building. That's, difficult. Now I have to get tested 2 times, to actually see the football side, I should say. So it's, it's difficult, but we're all dealing with things and, and this won't last. It will be over at some point in time. I think I don't love, people mention the financial ramification. I don't love all the red ink that we're going to see this year, but I hate more not seeing the fans in the building. Okay. That's, this is not, I have other means, okay, of income. I do have other businesses. I do this for the fans and for football. Okay. That's what I do it for. And, not having fans is very, hopefully we'll have fans. Hopefully we'll have some kind of agreement with the governor. Not having fans is something that I'm, I don't really like. they make a difference, and they make a difference to me. So, I hope we have fans. That'll make me happier. You'll get a smile back when we do, if we do. And listen, if we win, you'll get a smile again. It's, what it is from a football perspective, I'm not making excuses. There's no excuses. We're going to do fine. Okay. With what in this year, and I think Coach Roll will do a great job, but we have had more disadvantages for first year coach. And I hope that we won't have other disadvantages going forward. Okay. Cause that's why I'm here. Okay. This is for me, it's not, I really try to do the right thing if I can do it. It's not always easy, right? And I do this for the fun of it, right, to a certain extent. And just like you, I'm a fan, okay? I think that's pretty apparent if you've seen me at games or you see me around. I love the sport, and I love going there, and I love the fans. So they don't love me all the time, but I love them. There you go.
Josh, before we go to you, Elena had one more.
I just wanted to ask you, Dave, with Marty's contract, where are you with that? And would you anticipate, where are you with his contract situation?
I have constant conversations with Marty, and, that it hasn't come up. And, there's been too much to do, okay, to have those conversations. That'll be a conversation. You should ask me that question later on. I think me and Marty and I are very concentrated on doing as much as we can, and obviously Coach Roll, in getting this football team in shape and making sure we do get the players safe and healthy and starting the season. And that's all we care about right now.
Wow, Sharon, he covered a lot in that interview. Can you summarize what you heard?
That's sort of hard to do, but basically talked about, I think the biggest takeaway from this, he's obviously upset that there will be no fans in the stands. Might not be building that new stadium with a dome on it after all, because he's sort of got a new appreciation for outdoor air stadiums. Things are progressing down in South Carolina at the campus down there. It looks like it's going to be at least 3 years before the Panthers have training camp there. Tough decision to cut Cam Newton, and we could go on, but those are certainly some of the highlights. And he's very pleased with Matt Rhule and the job he's doing so far, and is looking forward to what he's going to be able to do in this upcoming season, which, heck, 1 week from today, we're going to be getting ready to listen to the Panthers pregame show and countdown to kickoff here for the first game, the home opener and the season opener against
the Raiders real quick.
It surprises me we're going to be playing. Now, are you going to be on the sidelines this year?
The NFL has banned all personnel, basically, who are not affiliated with the team. I mean, there are no sideline reporters. There's no pregame reporters. There will be nothing to that effect this year. It's going to be a very different-looking stadium for whoever ends up being in there. But as of right now, there's basically going to be nobody in that stadium who's not really a part of the actual team.
Now, my final question is, we finish up today's Carolina Focus, will there be cutouts in the stands like we have in baseball?
I wouldn't doubt it if they start trying to work up to that. I know a lot of baseball teams have already done it. Some of the college football teams are selling. You could buy a cutout and get your image,
really?
Your likeness put on it. So, yep. So that would be a lot of fun. So who knows? I'm sure David Tepper will come up with some way to try to make some money in that stadium if fans aren't actually in there.
Absolutely. Sharon, thanks for all you do for Carolina Focus. Folks, have a wonderful Labor Day weekend, and we'll talk to you all next week right here on Carolina Focus.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.